Oh,
works.
Right, yeah. Well, I think we can do some of that, but I would like to move past Simulink somewhat into actually hooking up to real stuff, okay? Which means you'll probably actually be writing, you know, a little C routines or something in, you know, for the Arduino or something. But we'll also be doing Octave and MATLAB or Simulink or even, you know, we can use GNU Radio, which is also similar to Simulink. It's a real-time thing, you know. Right, for the Arduino, yeah. Right. So, you know, we can try some of those kind of things. You know, in general, when you're doing a control system for the very basic kind of control, the ones that, you know, we'll probably look at least for quite a while here, it's a very simple kind of a thing. Basically, you're measuring several inputs, several, you know, maybe three or four inputs, and then you take a linear combination of those inputs, and that's your output, which drives your thing, right? I mean, it kind of boils down to something about as simple as that, which is something really easy to code. It's not hard. But there are always little trickinesses, you know? So I think we'll learn a lot by just trying to, you know, actually do real things. And I'd like to, as much as possible, get beyond just the simulation kind of stuff, because we've done that kind of thing before, like in signals and systems and so on, right? And in some cases, you know, like what we were doing in signals, that would be kind of what you were doing, you know? You're actually doing the feedback and control system. It's all in a digital domain, and it's, you know, and you try all these different nifty things that you can do on the computer that you can't probably do in analog, right? So you can do some cool stuff. But I'd like to also do a little bit more that has to do with some kind of, you know, thing that moves or something that's mechanical or something that, because in digital control, usually you are controlling some mechanical kind of a device. I mean, they call the other stuff not so much digital control systems, but they call that, you know, digital signal processing. You know, in a lot of cases, there's a feedback loop, right? We did those, right? So it really is a control system, but it's still, it's not what people kind of think of when you say digital control systems. Like, for example, this class that Greg Starr in the University of New Mexico does, it's kind of for mechanical engineers, right? So hopefully this isn't too mechanical for you, but it seems like moving stuff is kind of fun. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a moving thing for your project here. If you have some kind of, you know, digital signal processing idea that has some kind of feedback and control mechanism in it, that's fine too. I mean, you know, I have a few of those kind of things that I'd like to work on. There's one where I'd kind of like to make an adaptive kind of a control thing, adaptive filter kind of a thing, which is a feedback control system for nulling out the opposite sideband, you know, to make a, you know, one of these image reject mixers, and actually make it more perfect when you actually don't have perfect sine and cosine. You know, the one's a little bigger than the other, and there's a little bit of phase offset between the two oscillators, and so on. I'd like to make something like that that works really well. You know, I've fiddled around with the various different things, and I haven't come up with something that's super good yet. But, you know, that's like, something like that could be, you know, something you could do as well. So I'd just like you to dream about what you could use this for, right? And if you can come up with some fun little thing we could do, that'd be cool. So that's your assignment here. And we'll do the initially do, finally do system. So this is initially do on Wednesday, finally do on Friday. So on Friday I should have some ideas, hopefully, to look over. You know, come by and talk to me if you want. I have some ideas. Okay, so if you remember, what I'd like to do is just kind of remind you of what control systems are good for, there's really, for this kind of control, these are kind of, you know, thinking about mechanical kind of things, there are about three things that control really does for you. You know, the first thing is you're trying to get it to, you're trying to drive something to go somewhere, right? There's a reference input, and you're trying to get the output to follow, right? So the output follows the input. In some way, okay? In other words, you're driving an error signal to zero. You remember this kind of a thing. You know, you have this error signal here, and this error here goes to zero. You know, that's the idea. So that's the basic thing, the basic goal. And then the idea is that these kind of systems with feedback and control are supposed to be something that when a disturbance occurs, the effect is canceled out, right? Like, for example, when you have an open loop system and you're sending a rocket up to hit some other rocket or something and something bumps this rocket, you know, it's never going to correct and get back on course and, you know, go on. But with a control system, when it gets buffeted off, right, it sees, whoops, something bumped me off, right? I need to go this way now, right? And it will correct its course and hopefully still end up going where you want it to go, okay? So it's supposed to be immune to disturbances, more immune to disturbances. And then the other thing was something that was extremely important to us in electronics. And that thing in electronics was that it was, you could put feedback on a circuit and you could get the gain you wanted and all those kind of things. And it really didn't matter what the beta of the transistor was, right? As long as it was big. And that is the idea that it's not affected by changes in the parameters of the amplifier or the plant or whatever. Right? So immune or parameter differences don't matter. Okay, so those are the three things that we're going to get from a digital control system, and actually any kind of control system gives you those kind of effects. Now, the advantage of digital control are, of course, let's see. The first advantage would be, well, if you compare to analog control, if you think about analog control, when you're doing analog control, maybe, you know, an example would be you're using an op amp, right? And using resistors. And the feedback network might be made up of resistors, or you're using an op amp to make an integrator circuit or a summer or something like that. And this amplifier circuit is supposed to do some linear combination, you know, like 2 times this voltage plus that voltage gives you the output or something, right? And when you actually make those circuits, you know that those analog outputs depend on several things, okay? The first thing they depend on is that those resistors are the right values, right? If they're resistors, there's going to be 5% tolerance or something, right? Then you really don't get 2 times this voltage plus that voltage. You get 2.05 or something times this voltage plus 0.95 of this or something, right? And it's not as accurate as you get with digital control. Now, in digital control, what you would do instead of doing an op-amp circuit that does, you know, your op-amp circuit would be something like this, you know. You got this two resistors here, and then you got feedback resistor like this, and this is going to give you, you know, minus, say, V1 and V2, and B out is equal to say, you know, I call this RF and this R1 and R2, you're getting minus RF over R1 times B1 minus RF over R2 times B2. And of course, if the R's change, you know, you don't get exactly what you want. And to get exactly what you want, you're going to have to pay for a lot of precision on those resistors. You know, about the best you can get is 1%, and that'll cost you a bit more than 5%, you know. And so that's a whole lot different than when you take an A to D converter, you know, A to D, and this could be, you know, 12 bits or something, right? And then you go into a CPU and you do minus two, well, maybe I need two A to D's here. A to D. So you got B1 and B2, and I guess I should just run this in here too, just like this. Minus two B1. Minus B2 or something like that, you know, this is going to be done much more precisely. In other words, you know, in your processor, you can have, you know, 32 bits of precision or something, right? And you will get a very good number here. These numbers here are excellent, right? So we don't have that kind of a thing. So I'm going to say the precision of arithmetic is great, is excellent. And these are basically the same kind of, you know, advantages we had with digital signal processing compared to analog signal processing back in signals, right? So that's one great advantage of digital. Another big advantage is you have a little bit of the same disadvantage here, but not the same, okay? You see, in an analog control system, you'd have a whole bunch of op amps or something doing all your actual, you know, linear combinations, right? So you'd have a whole bunch of op amps, a great big op amp circuit that does these things. Now, you know these op amps, they run on, you know, plus and minus 15 volts or something, right? Or some VCC, right? And you got, and any time any of the outputs here tries to go bigger than 15 volts, it saturates, right? Now, you have the same thing with the A to D here, because the A to D is going to be running on some voltage too, you know, VCC or whatever, right? And you got to have the same thing at the beginning here. But it's much less here than it is up there, because here it's all the way through, okay? But basically, once you have these numbers into the computer, you know, you can use floating point if you want to, and you can have 10 to the, you know, you can have numbers that aren't going to overflow, right? I mean, how many times have you actually taken some, you know, calculation in your, you know, your homework, and had your calculator come up with, you know, 9999E999 or something, right? I mean, not very often. It doesn't happen very often. But let me tell you, when you try to make a control system, like for the pendulum, you know, way back when I taught feedback, many, many years ago, I told these guys, look, we'll make an analog controller for the pendulum, right? And so we did. We built an op-amp circuit, and we simulated the whole thing in SPICE, and then I told them they could get out of the final if they made it balance. And so there were a bunch of guys that made it balance. But one of the hardest things was you had to keep scaling the voltages. You couldn't just do a minus 2 this thing right here, because this voltage, this intermediate result, would get bigger than 15, right? So you'd have to go and you'd have to scale everything down. Well, okay, I'm going to make this, you know, 15, and I've got to drop everything by 10 here or something, right? And then somewhere else I'm going to make it go up by 10, because finally at the very end, you know, when it goes out the thing, it's got to be the right number, right? So you had to do all this kind of scaling to make sure that these things wouldn't overflow, they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't saturate. And let me tell you, that was a pain in the neck. I mean, you just add that much complication on top of everything else, and it's just like, oh, you know, why do I have to deal with this, you know? As opposed to this kind of a system, which has been done, you know, that was done once, okay? And they, you know, actually Carlson hired one of my students who was one of the people who made it work. There was a whole bunch of them made it work. And they kind of wrecked the mechanism after a while because, you know, when you got this analog controller and you have this pendulum, you know, and it's starting up, you know, and it goes back and forth like this, you know, and they're trying to hold the thing to get it started. You know, it didn't have some of the advantages of digital where you can kind of say, look, at don't turn on the motor until it gets lined up just right. You know, and then some of those kind of things you can do very easily in digital are not so easy in analog. So there was a number of them that got it going that one time, and Carlton hired one of them to work for him that summer because he thought, oh, well, we'll do this every time, you know, and I'll just have a little circuit board where they plug in the resistors, you know, just change the resistor values, right? And you know what? Nobody was ever able to make it work again after that. It was a very difficult problem, you know, and whereas, you know, with the digital controller, you know, first of all, we had the digital controller working before the analog controller, and the digital controller has worked many times in many different versions since, okay? But the analog was a pain because of that. So you don't have overflow problems or less. Not gone, but... Okay, so that's the second advantage for digital control systems. And let's see, what's another advantage of digital control systems? Well, nowadays, often there's a computer somewhere around the thing that you're using for something like recording the data or something, right? And that you can do all those kind of things. You can do many more complicated operations in a computer than you would want to do in an analog system. I mean, you know, they had some pretty fancy analog signal processing things. But there's no comparison, you know, what they had analog versus what you can do digital. I mean, it's quite easy to do all the analog kind of things in digital, and then there are a bunch of things that you would not dream of doing analog because of these problems, like the precision, you know, is limited, right? For example, you can make, just take a filter, right? You know, an FIR filter, you can make a, you know, 256 tap FIR filter, which is equivalent, roughly, of having 256 poles, right? But you don't ever see anybody build an analog filter more than about 8 poles, maybe 16 once in a while, okay? But 8 poles is very difficult, and the reason it's very difficult is because getting the components, you know, all those inductors and capacitors, when they have plus or minus 5% or even more on inductors, it's like, you know, the results you get are no good. You can add more poles after that, but it's not doing what you want it to do, really. It's just making your filter worse because of the, you know, precision problems. So, complicated things are easy. Or easier. Or maybe just possible. Okay. And then probably the last big advantage I can think of is changes are extremely easy to do. There's a difference between when you've designed a circuit like this and now you want to change something, right? Well, if you just want to change some numbers, like for example, what you do in a digital system, if you want to just change the numbers, right? Just the numbers, like the FIR filter coefficients. That's like changing the resistor values over here, okay? If you want to change the algorithm slightly, that's like changing the circuit up here, okay? That entails a whole new circuit board, right? That's a pain in the neck, right? Whereas here, you just sit down and type a few things into your computer, and you've got a whole new system, right? So, ease of changes, of making changes. And I suppose kind of along with that is that the digital control system, it's easy to simulate too. You know, actually, I suppose with a computer, analog control systems are easy to simulate. But the digital ones are especially easy to simulate because everything's already digital, right? I mean, you can kind of see what's going to happen. So there's a lot of advantages to doing digital, and actually nowadays, I think almost all controllers are done with digital control systems. Anything that has any complexity at all probably has a digital control system now. There are a few instances where, you know, you have something that's not, I was just trying to remember, wasn't it you, Brian, that's doing something for key and you're doing with a little RC circuit? Yeah. You know, that's a little bit of analog signal processing still going on. But most times people are using a digital system now. And probably my guess is if they hadn't come along and said, we want to do it this way, you probably would have gone with a digital system, right? So, digital systems are getting to be so cheap, you know, when you can buy an Arduino for $2.50, you know, and it's got, you know, a whole bunch of I/O pins and A to D and D to A and very easy to program, and it's like, wow. I mean, it's the cost is not an issue now. I mean, so it's about as easy to make a circuit board with an Arduino kind of processor on it and, you know, some other little things as it is to make an analog circuit, you know, and the price is not that much difference. And when you look at these advantages here, you know, it makes it mighty, mighty inviting to do that. So those are the kind of things that we'll be enjoying, those kind of advantages over the old-fashioned way of doing things. And, you know, I suppose I could even say it kind of goes along with this complex things, complicated things are possible, and maybe I should say possible or much easier. Because, you know, you can make an op-amp circuit that does a logarithm if you need it, but it sure is a lot easier to type, you know, ln of blank. I mean, and the thing about software too, you know, this all has to do with software. Software is something that you can easily give to somebody else, right? That means that you can build on things that you've done before and that other people have done, which is an advantage it's still there with analog. You know, you can give somebody a circuit diagram and so on, but it's not as easy. Because you still have to build it. The software, you can just load it, you know. Okay, so are there any questions about, you know, the advantages or why we want to do digital control rather than analog? Okay, good. So the next thing I'd like to think about, we've got just a little bit of time. I'd like to go to number two, which I didn't put on the outline there, number two. And I want to talk about how discrete time systems relate to continuous time systems, you know, kind of thinking in the control world. Okay, so let's look at this. Okay, so let's think about, first of all, a continuous system here. So normally, if we have a continuous system, what kind of equations do generally govern a continuous system that we might be trying to control? Yeah, differential equations usually is what it is, right? It's something like Newton's laws or something like that, right? And you know, some of these differential equations can be nonlinear and can be, you know, kind of tricky, right? But just like we did in electronics, what I'd like to do in most of the time in this class In fact, probably for all the theoretical stuff, I want to stick to linear systems. In other words, what we'll be doing is if we have a nonlinear system, like an electronic circuit or something, we'll be using a small signal approximation for that to make an operating point, and then we're making a linear system. So what I'd like to think about is linear differential equations, because that's what we get from linear systems. And so if I think about a linear differential equation, an example might be something like maybe we'll put an input here. So here's the input, and this is a harmonic oscillator equation. So this is a bouncy thing, and we can bounce it, okay? So that's an example of an equation that would come from Newton's laws. Maybe this is something, a plant, something we'd like to control, right? We'd like to make this thing bounce the way we want it to bounce. We don't like it bouncing at this frequency omega zero here. We want it to bounce at maybe omega zero plus something or omega zero minus something, right? So how would we do that? Well, we can do that by measuring the x back here and by looking at that x, change what we put in for u, right? We can actually change this thing to do that. Now, that's what we do when we're thinking about continuous kind of a thing. Well, what we'll do in digital control is we will have some continuous real-world system, but then we're going to take and run it through an A to D converter, and somewhere over here we'll have a D to A converter, right? And then this will go back, and this this will be our inputs here, and this will be our U going back in or something, right? Does that make sense? Maybe this would be measuring your position and your velocity here of this thing right here, and you're taking it and doing analog to digital conversion. You got some control algorithm here. You're putting out some U here that you'd be driving that thing to make it go at a new frequency. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take this thing right here, and similar to what we did in signals, we're going to have to sample, right? Because the A to D converter, is a sampling process, right? And then we're going to do a bunch of manipulations. Then we're going to put out a D to A converter, right? And that's, has to do with sampling as well. And, this is kind of they call this like a zero order hold that, when you're putting out those little steps, right? You're going to put out some little steppy function, which is going to be your U of T, and that's going to drive this thing and hopefully make it bounce at your new frequency, okay? And so when you do that, you end up with something like this. When you look at x, this x is an x of t. This is x of t. Down here, we're gonna do this thing in the discrete world, and you get something like this. This derivative. Maybe I shouldn't have done a second derivative because that's a little bit more complicated. But you can do that. How do you do a second derivative? Well, that's the derivative. We'll work it out over here. So dx dt is something like this. This would be x at t plus, we'll put in kt, k plus 1t, k plus 1t, minus x at kt, divided by t, where t is my sampling time or something. That would be my best first order approximation for a derivative, right? The forward difference. I'll put approximately here. And then if I do the second derivative of x with respect to t, I've got to do a derivative of this, right? So I got to take this thing right here. This is approximately this is dx dt at kt, right? It's really kind of halfway in between kt and k plus 1t. So then you do the same kind of thing here again, right? And so we'd have, I'd need to take this thing and advance it 1, so that would be x of k plus 2 t minus x of k plus 1 t divided by t. So this is kind of like that. And then I'm going to have to divide that by t again, and I'm going to subtract this thing over here, which is just this guy, x of k plus 1 t minus x of kt all over t. Now let's see, did I do this right? This is the derivative evaluated, you know, one further down the creek, right? And minus the derivative where I am right here, right? Divided by the t here. And so you end up with something, you know, this is approximate here, which is approximate. So what do we get here? If you look at here, I've got this guy, and then I've got minus that guy, and then minus another one of that guy over there, right? And then I've got, so what is it? You guys have done this. How many of you guys have taken numerical analysis? Do you remember this kind of stuff? Did anybody do that? Yeah, this is
good.
Yeah, I mean, you did this kind of stuff, right? Oops, that should have been 2 here, 2. And then minus 2 x of k plus 1 t. And then I've got, it's going to be plus an x of kt, right? And then what have I got? T squared or something, is that right? And so you can see when I do this thing down here, I'm going to have instead something like x of k plus 2 t minus 2 x of k plus 1 t plus x of kt divided by t squared, and then plus omega 0 squared times x of kt equals u of kt, something like that. And so what was a differential equation now becomes a difference equation, okay? And the thing here, when we had things up here, there was a derivative operator, but down here, there's more of a delay operator. There's this, you know, you got two delays here, one delay there, no delays there, kind of thing, right? And we found that when we were doing this kind of stuff up here, it was possible to do it all in the time domain. That was fine. But we could also gain some traction by doing it in another basis set, you know, in the frequency domain, which was kind of handy, okay? And we actually could take and do this all in, you know, DFTs. We could just do this all with DFTs. However, instead of people using DFTs, they've taken to using a thing called Z-transforms in control systems, okay? And Z-transforms are, they're related to the DFT very closely, and in some ways it's just kind of a notational difference, but it's enough of a big enough jump in a notational difference that it will probably seem like a whole new transform, okay? And so the second chapter in our book is dealing with this, you know, Z-transforms and how do they relate to these difference equations, because we're going to be dealing with difference equations more, because you see this thing takes a, you know, a sample every capital T seconds, okay? And so we really have this up here, but we're going to be doing this down here. And in general, you know, you could actually take, and what I did when I last time I taught feedback, we all did everything continuously, and then at the very last business what we did was we took our state equation, which, you know, x dot equals ax plus bu, and we just did a first order difference like this, right? And then we could solve for x of k plus 1 in terms of the last x's, right? And we could use that to figure out what the next thing we needed to put out was, okay? And And that works wonderfully, especially when your capital T is small. But as when you try and do this thing and you're trying to run it on a processor that is going about as slow as you possibly can and still do this thing, you know, in other words, not doing a whole lot of calculations, extra calculations per second, then you have to worry about these kind of issues that pop up because of the discrete nature of the thing. It's not just easy to say, well, this approximation is almost exactly equal and I can just, you know, go with it. It's not so equal when the T gets bigger, right? And so in those cases, some of the things that are special to digital control, some of the gotchas pop out. And so we'll be looking at some of those kind of things. So we're looking first at Z transforms, which will be kind of a new thing, and then we'll, you know, actually be trying to control some things, and you'll see some of those kind of effects happening because of the discrete nature of things. So are there questions about what we've done here today? You think you can come up with some kind of project ideas? Hopefully. That's one of the things about engineering. There's actually some creativity in it. You know, you actually get to dream up something, right? And so, you know, that's important. And so you need to do that. So here's an opportunity for, you know, some out-of-the-box thinking, dreaming, you know. What could we do? What would be fun? This would be really nifty or whatever. And, you know, if you come up with something that's kind of fun, you know, that make a good demo unit or something, who knows? Maybe I can persuade the department to spend some money and build some of these things, you know. I don't know. Let's go for it.